HBpodcraft.com.
Seizing her by the hair, Thalis dragged her down the corridor a short distance to the edge of the circle of light. A metal ring showed in the wall above the level of a man's head. From it depended a silken cord. As in a nightmare, Natala felt her tunic being stripped from her. And the next instant, Thalis had jerked her wrists and bound them to the ring where she hung, naked as the day she was born, her feet barely touching the floor. Twisting her head, Natala saw Thalis unhook a jewel-handled whip from where it hung on the wall near the ring. The lashes consisted of 7 round silk cords, harder yet more pliant than leather thongs. With a hiss of vindictive gratification, Thalis drew back her arm, and Natala shrieked as the cords curled across her loins. The tortured girl writhed, twisted, and tore agonizedly at the thongs which imprisoned her wrists. She had forgotten the lurking menace her cries might summon, and so apparently had Thalis.
Holy shit! That is some crazy woman-on-woman violence.
Yes.
Something we don't get ever, really, on this show, but we're getting it here from Robert E. Howard and his story, The Slithering Shadow.
This is a Conan story with some Lovecraftian elements and, of course, some naughty elements.
Yeah, and that's why we're covering it here on the HP Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
We are at hppodcraft.com. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey.
And this week we're using music from our old friend Reber Clark. Reber is currently running a 25% sale on many of his Lovecraftian soundtracks, including music from Dark Adventure Radio Theater. He does some great stuff for them. If you go to reberclark.bandcamp.com and pop in code SILVERKEY, one word, Silver Key, you will get said discounts. So check that out. And our reader is once again Andrew Staten. You can find Andrew on Twitter or Instagram at Andrew_Staten. That's Andrew_Staten. Hit him up. He's a swell guy. Speaking of swelling, I've got the flu right now. So my throat's a little messed up. So there's a frog monster in the story. I kind of sound like a frog monster. Might possibly add something.
You sound pretty good, actually.
Yeah?
The way you were talking on the email, I thought you were going to sound, you know, but no, you're just kind of, no, you're fine.
We'll see how it goes.
This is the second chapter of this Conan tale that we're covering right now. The first week, I'll give you a quick recap of what we talked about. Conan and this woman, Natala, are lost in the desert. They come upon a city where everyone sleeps all day, and there's a giant shadow monster called Thog. Thog comes out every so often and eats people, and today just happens to be one of those days. Conan and Natala have run into this woman, Thalis, who is not a native of the city, but she was kidnapped and used as a sex slave. She likes Conan. Conan likes Natala. So Thalis has kidnapped Natala and is torturing her, as we heard in the reading.
Right. We ended with a bit of a cliffhanger before in the last episode. You know, this city that we're in, Zuthal, it's called. It's really one gigantic palace with lots of secret passageways and connections. And Thalis asked Conan to keep watch for a second because they heard something. He goes to look, and when he turns, she's gone with Natala. There's a tapestry on the wall settling back into place, so Thalis must have nabbed Natala and taken her away behind a secret passageway there.
Right.
And the next chapter switches to their story, so Conan doesn't even know what happened to them yet.
Natala did put up a bit of a fight as Thalis was going to chain her up and leave her for the sleeping guys. Once they see her, they're going to want to rape her because that's the kind of people they are.
Well, that or she's left her for Thog to get her because he's creeping around. And she says, you'll be the bride of him who dwells in darkness is what you'll get, so... Could be Thog that comes to get her, or both.
Or both.
Which is probably what she wants.
But since she fought back, Thalis is angry at her and decides that she's going to give her a good whipping.
Yeah, well, and it was good that Natala fought back for a moment because she is a little passive in this story. But as she was being dragged away, she reached out, found that Thalis had a knife on her girdle. So Natala grabbed it, stabbed at Thalis, and that got her to loosen her grip, and she was able to get away for a moment. So Thalis kind of had a hunt for her in the dark, getting angrier and angrier. She finally tracked her down. Now, with Thalis, her reasoning is that Conan rejected her because, remember, she said, hey, why don't you stay here and be my lover?
Yeah.
And he says, no, I just want to go. So she thinks the only reason he rejected her is because he cares about Natala, and if Natala's out of the picture, he'll be all hers.
Right.
Natala says, no, he'll cut your throat if you do anything to me. But Thalis says, hey, I'll take my chances because I really want this guy. I like him that much.
Right.
She's super aggressive and strong. She goes after what she wants. What's interesting is she even takes on some of the cat descriptors that normally would just be reserved for Conan.
Right.
It says, the instant the Cimmerian's back was turned, Thalis, with a pantherish quickness almost incredible, clapped her hand over to Natala's mouth. And even when she got stabbed, it said, a scream burst from Thalis's lips, feline in its pain and fury. we got a comment on that first episode that mentioned this fact, and it was from Deep One. That's what she said.
That's what she said.
I get it now.
Deep one. That's what she said.
I actually didn't get it. I thought it was, you know,
Pfeiffer.
I know. I thought it was an interesting comment on the difference between the two women as well. Here's the comment. What really stuck out for me in this story was the pair of women and their contrast to each other. Also how Thallus seems almost like a female Conan, pointedly described as panther-like several times, while Natala never is. And finally, how Thallus faces the classic cliche punishment for the crime of being a woman who is intelligent, sexually confident, and in charge of her own fate, despite being as subjugated, if not more so, as Natala. Interestingly to me, the two women are both sex slaves, yet it seems as though Natala reads as a virgin, while Thallus reads as more of a whore. I think this is because she relates to Conan with active desire and agency, in contrast with Natala's passive need and dependency. Possible that Conan was threatened by Thallus, not physically, you know, but like as a man. Like maybe she was coming on too strong. Conan's not used to that. Wow, it turns out I really like Thallus. Oh, Thallus, I'm pouring some of my 40 out onto the pavement for you right now, girl. You were a satisfying panther-like female character who was taken from us too soon. I suppose that tips what is about to happen to Thallus.
Well, yeah.
Although not until we get some of that naughty whipping action.
And
I, you know, I was surprised when I was looking for images to put up with the show last week.
Cow. Yeah, dude.
The Weird Tales cover.
That is unbelievable that that was on the cover of Weird Tales.
Yeah, it was just this whipping scene and Natala's naked and she's getting it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That blew me away. So, I put it online for everybody, too.
Thank God.
Yeah.
But since Natala is being tortured, she's screaming a lot. And Thallus doesn't seem to mind. In fact, she's delighting in the fact that she's causing her so much pain.
Yeah.
In her delight, she seems to have completely forgotten about Thog, the shadow monster. Mm-hmm. And as Thallus is beating Natala, she sees Natala make a less pain face and more of a hellish monster coming face. Thallus realizes this. And as she turns to see where it is and what's happening, it's too late. The beast has her. And it pulls her back into the shadows, leaving Natala. And man, this part is pretty creepy because Thallus isn't just killed right away. Natala can hear her screaming and then pleading with the creature. And then she's laughing and then she's sobbing. And then it says, this dwindled to a convulsive panting. And presently this too ceased and a silence more terrible hovered over the secret corridor. That is brutal.
Pretty gruesome fate.
Natala couldn't see the beast, but she knew it was lurking in the darkness somewhere, so she kept quiet, hoping that it might go away, but then it slowly emerges from the shadows.
Right, and of course, she's still tied up. Nobody freed her, which you might be tempted to think the whole whipping scene was just put in there for the naughty factor, and it did make the cover a Weird Tale, so it definitely works to titillate, but I think the real purpose is to have that innocent victim totally immobilized while the monster shows up and rears its ugly head.
Right.
It's really good storytelling by Howard. You don't just have the monster show up, but you got to have the hero immobilized so they can't do anything about it.
Right.
Like, if you think of that scene from The Thing, where they're all tied to the chairs. And that's it's that, like, oh no, here it is, but I can't do anything. I can't attack it. I'm totally stuck here.
This creature, it was described before kind of as a shadow monster, but now we actually get some features to it. It's got a misshapen head, a great toad-like face, and it says, great pools of light that might have been eyes blinked at her. So it has glowing eyes. Mm-hmm. Its outline seems to waver and alter subtly. So it is sort of amorphous, but it definitely has a face and a head-like thing and eyes. Then it creeps closer.
As it came toward her, she could not tell whether it walked, wriggled, flew, or crept. Its method of locomotion was absolutely beyond her comprehension. When it had emerged from the shadows, she was still uncertain as to its nature. The light from the radium gem did not illumine as it would have illumined an ordinary creature. Impossible as it seemed, the being seemed almost impervious to the light. Its details were still obscure and indistinct, even when it halted so near that it almost touched her shrinking flesh. Only the blinking, toad-like face stood out with any distinctness. The thing was a blur in the sight, a black blot of shadow that normal radiance would neither dissipate nor illuminate. She decided she was mad, because she could not tell whether the being looked up at her or towered above her.
I love that it's so otherworldly that all spatial relations are off.
Yeah.
You know, that she can't tell if it's looking up at her or down at her. That's so bizarre. Mm. And I know that Robert E. Howard is clearly in love with that idea, too, because he repeats it a couple of times. And even in the same paragraph, he just repeats it. But that's kind of the most Lovecraftian thing about it. Yes, it's got features. Yes, it has this toad-like head. It's got the eyes, but there's something about it that's so otherworldly you just can't make out where it is in space or it's really cool.
So Natala starts to scream uncontrollably as the creature grabs her and tries to rip her from the chains. Then something crashed above them and a form hurtled down And then that brings us into chapter 3. In chapter 3, we cut back to where Thallus has just taken Atala away from Conan, and we're seeing Conan's side of it, and Conan's running around trying to find them. This is interesting to me because Howard uses some strange language here, and I wasn't sure, I said last week, if Natala was Conan's slave or not, but he says this, maddened at the disappearance of his sweetheart. Sweetheart, that seems a lot more sensitive than I thought Conan would be capable of, like sweet. In any way, it didn't seem like it was something, but he uses that. So maybe she is a lot more voluntarily involved with him than one would think.
Yeah, I mean, what I would guess is that he liberated her out of personal interest.
Right.
She decided to stick with him also because it was practical. But then they developed this relationship over time because they were on the run while their army was being slaughtered around them. They clearly have a fondness for one another. Also, you know, it's Robert E. Howard's word, sweetheart. It's not like Conan said, sweetheart!
No, but get
over here!
But the fact that Howard uses that word, it really says something to me because that just doesn't feel like a word that would be used in a Conan story.
It definitely jumped out at me too. But you know, the character of Conan, he does have a code of his own.
Right.
And he does have a kindness to him. He always fights for, you know, the downtrodden. He is a sensitive person in a lot of respects. Even though if you make him angry, he might split your skull in half. If he sees that, you know, you're doing something mean to somebody else, he might protect that person because he's got that kind of sensitivity. But, you know, it says, maddened at the disappearance of his sweetheart, the barbarian reverted to type, which I think is also cool too. He's going berserk.
Yeah, he's going nuts and he's trying to find Natala.
And he knows they disappeared behind that tapestry, but when he pulls it aside, there's just a blank wall there. He can't get through to where they went.
And just then, 12 city guards move in to attack him. But again, this is Conan. And on top of it being Conan, he's on berserker mode.
Right.
So he just cuts the guys down like they're nothing. They are particularly bad because they don't really fight very often. They sleep all day, for one. But also, the city rarely gets visitors because they're out in the middle of the desert. So these guys are just really not the best.
And he doesn't skimp on the action. I mean, the way that he takes them down, it's very graphic. The first attacker went down with his brains gushing from his split skull. Wheeling like a cat, Conan caught a descending wrist on his edge, and the hand gripping the short sword flew into the air, scattering a shower of red drops. Yeah. A pantherish twist and shift of his body avoided the blundering rush of two yellow swordsmen, and the blade of one missing its objective was sheathed in the breast of the other. So he did the, you know, he got out of the way and one of them killed the other guy, which was pretty cool. Another guy attacks him. It says a long spurt of crimson followed his singing edge and the man crumpled screaming, his belly muscles cut through. I don't know. That got to me. Unaccustomed to battle. Right. They were ridiculously slow and clumsy compared to the tigerish barbarian. His motions were blurs of quickness, possible only to steel thews knit to a perfect fighting brain. In that one sentence.
The sounds of combat are waking people up, including more guards. But this rich guy comes out from behind the tapestry, up some stairs, where there's a passageway. The guy looks all bleary-eyed because he just woke up, but he sees Conan and the carnage, and he isn't sure what's going on.
Conan takes a tigerish leap up to meet him.
This is the part I liked here. The oncoming horde tripped over three writhing forms at its foot. One lay face down in the sickening welter of blood and brains. Another propped himself up on his hands, blood spurting blackly from his severed throat veins. The other howled like a dying dog as he clawed at the crimson stump that had been an arm.
Oh, man.
So Conan slays a bunch more of these guys, and he makes his way to this hidden passage. And the sleepy rich guy finally gets it together and draws on Conan.
Mm-hmm.
Why? This dude has just killed over a dozen guys by himself. Like, just run. I mean, I get it if you think maybe you've got some kind of advantage, like you're sneaking up on him or something like this. But Conan has just done all the stuff right in front of him.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Just run.
Well, but the guy does get Conan, doesn't he? I mean, he's got the higher ground, and it says he thrust downward as the barbarian surged upon him. But as the point sank toward his throat, Conan ducked deeply. The blade slit the skin of his back. He's the first guy that actually managed to cut Conan.
Yeah.
But then Conan ducks out of the way, which is why he got his back. And then he straightens up and drives his sword right up into his body, right?
Exactly. The guy's an idiot.
Basically cuts him in half.
You run. Yeah, big whoop. You cut a little back, little scratch on his back, and then boom. Now you get a sword cutting you in half.
Yeah, ripped open to the spine from groin to broken breastbone.
Yeah.
Whew. In a ghastly mess of streaming entrails, the body tumbled against the men rushing up the stairs. So then they start slipping on the guy's guts.
Well, right. He throws the dude at the other guys that are coming up, like more guards that are coming.
I had a poster of Conan when I was a kid that I got from, and I wasn't a huge Conan fan necessarily, but I had one of these Savage Swords of Conan magazines that used to come out that I just, for some reason, had picked up at the store, and they had it in the back. It said, hey, if you send in your $5 or whatever, we'll send you this poster. And it was, it just looked so cool to me. And then when I got it, it was actually pretty large. I put it at my room, and my mother was horrified because it was Conan on top of just a mountain of bodies.
Yeah.
Of all of these guys that he'd killed. And every single one of them, there was a special detail in how they had been killed. Like their half their face was hacked off, or their brain was oozing out. Or wow. I mean, it was just so gruesome. I loved it. I thought it was so cool. Yeah. She's like, "You're so obsessed with violence and death." I didn't know how to explain. I was like, "I'm actually not. I just think this looks cool. I don't yeah. know. This doesn't make me want to hurt anybody. I just like it."
But that's the thing about Conan, I think, is there is a little piece of us that want to be a barbarian and just have that freedom and be able to just have simple solutions to life's problems.
Yeah, and be that powerful and be able to execute those solutions. Yeah, exactly.
Of course, I don't want to be Conan. I don't want to kill people. I don't want to hack anybody. I like the subtleties in my life, and I appreciate them and all that stuff. However, there is something that I think lots of people can relate to. I mentioned that all women find Conan attractive.
Yeah.
I don't personally think that all women find him attractive, but I think that's the idea of Howard specifically. There's something about Conan that just, he's so awesome that even if Conan's not typically your type, you'd be into him.
It's wish fulfillment. Howard uses the wish fulfillment to draw you into these stories. And then he's got more to say under the surface.
He does.
It's definitely wish fulfillment in that and in the fighting because, you know, fights aren't like this.
No.
You know, fights are awful and horrible and awkward. And to think that you could so cleanly destroy all these people, it's kind of like, you know, when my nephews were real little and I would throw them around the room, you know, they like all attack me and I could just pick them up and throw them into the couch and then and then they come get me again. I mean, you're like, this is awesome. It's that feeling of being powerful.
And he really taps into that. And I appreciate it. Not that I think Conan is a role model. In fact, I the exact opposite of it. It's kind of a dark pleasure for me that taps into a more primal side of who I am.
I'm so glad that you just said it's kind of a dark pleasure for me.
What's horrible too is I said it in all seriousness.
I know you did, but that's the most God thing I've heard you say in many a decade.
Now I'm gonna just go curl up in the fetal position and listen to the swans and just cry myself to sleep.
Oh, I love it. Well, so he slaughters this rich guy and throws him against the other guards.
Yeah, and then Conan runs upstairs. He looks around. Nobody else is up there. He's just running around pretty randomly, just trying to, one, get to safety, but also find Natala. And he manages to end up running back into the room that he was once in with the guards. They go crazy after him again. So this is a bit like some kind of Abbott Costello bit here, where Conan, he keeps running, and right. I keep thinking, like, you know, all the guys go into one door and he goes into another door and then they right. all come out the same door. And
or like Benny Hill, like Yakety Sax is playing.
Exactly, yeah.
Even down to what happens next is very Benny Hill.
Right. So Conan ends up running into this very ornate room and there's a woman in there. This time she is not a foreigner. She's actually a Zuthulinian. I don't know.
Sure.
She screams as Conan barges in. She's wearing some fancy jewels and nothing else.
Right. So you got the TNA in there.
Yeah. The gratuitous.
Very Benny Hill, but also like every 80s action movie, they always wanted to squeeze that in. Like there'd be a big fight going on and they'd all go through the wall of a room and suddenly they'd, you know, it'd be like the stripper's yes. dressing room.
Right.
And they're in a whorehouse for no reason. You know, right. something would happen where all these, oh my gosh.
They could just have some naked breasts.
Just squeeze in some breasts yep. without having to justify it in any way at all. No. It's just they happened into that room during the fight.
The shocked woman then reaches up and she pulls this rope, which opens a trap door that Conan happens to be standing upon, and he falls into it. And he falls, but not far. Well, it was far enough to have snapped the leg bones of a man not built of steel springs and whalebone.
Whalebone.
So, of course, Conan is that type of man, so he's fine. But as he hits the ground, he hears Natala scream and looks up and sees the creature going after her. So now we're back up to speed from chapter 2.
That was a pretty lucky fall. I mean, that he happened to go right to the exact place where she was being tortured.
Yeah.
Good coincidence.
Or fate.
Or fate.
Conan decides, okay, I'm going to attack this creature on his feet as a lynx rebounds with snarling bared fangs.
Well, he sees, you know, that this horrible monster is going after his girl.
Right.
And that sends a red wave of murderous fury through Conan's brain. So then you have that the thing where the monster's so horrific, anybody else would have been frozen with fear or maybe even driven insane. But Conan, when he sees something that shouldn't be there, he goes, I just want to kill this.
And Conan does. He tears into it like crazy. and he hacks into it, but then it kind of keeps reforming.
His sword passes right through and clangs on the ground, so he can't even get the friction of cutting into something.
Yeah.
But there is some kind of blood or ooze coming from it when he cuts it, so it's doing something, bleeding somehow.
Yeah, but it's attacking him. It's biting, clawing, crushing, and clubbing him all at the same time, and he felt fangs and talons rend his flesh, flabby cables that were yet as hard as iron encircle his limbs and body. Of course, it's some kind of a poisonous attack. It also feels like he's getting scorpion stings.
Really messing up his back. There's a great line here. It says, "Once he sank his teeth, beast-like, into the flabby substance of his foe, revolting as the stuff writhed and squirmed like living rubber from between his iron jaws." Oh, man, he bit into this nastiness.
So Conan and the creature are rolling around down the corridor in a frenzy of attacks. Conan finally sees this frog face and he plunges his sword into it. And the creature freaks out and tries to take off, but Conan holds onto the sword that's in the creature's face. And so the creature from this attack is kind of starting to glow. Mm-hmm. And then it's brighter and brighter until it blinds Conan, and then it tears itself away, and then it just drops below him. And then Conan feels like his arms go down, drop, and then his vision starts to return, and he sees that it's a tunnel, that it went down into a tunnel. Conan can see it falling or just going down really fast, smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, down into the darkness until it totally disappeared.
Yeah, it's more like a pit or a well that it fell down into.
Yeah.
So you get the satisfaction that Conan has beat the creature, but did he kill it?
Nah, don't know.
Don't know. I mean, the thing is described often as a god, so
yeah.
Can't imagine that he was able to do it, but you know, he's doing better than any other Lovecraftian hero would do.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think even later in the story, Conan says, you know, I don't know if steel can kill the thing, but I beat it. Even he's not sure if it's dead, but he does feel pretty confident. So in chapter 4, we're back with Natala. She's freaking out seeing Conan taken off by the thing. She faints a bit. And then she hears footsteps and sees Conan coming to rescue her. He's all messed up. Every step he dripped blood. His face was skinned and bruised as if he had been beaten with a bludgeon. His lips were pulped and blood oozed down his face from a wound in his scalp. There were deep gashes on his thighs, calves, and forearms, and great bruises showed on his limbs and body from impacts against the stone floor. But his shoulders, back, and upper breast muscles had suffered the most. The flesh was bruised, swollen, and lacerated, the skin hanging in loose strips as if he had been lashed with wire whips.
Wow. It's like the Passion of the Conan. How much can you punish this guy? Howard is really reveling in what a beating Conan took. His skin hanging in loose strips. Oh,
yeah, I know. It's pretty rough. And she's like, oh, God, Conan, you're dying. And he says, like, very kind of Kurt Russell-esque, well, you can't fight the devil out of hell and come off a whole skin.
She's looking at his back. It lashed me with a tentacle, but it was the damnable squeezing that got my wind. It was worse than a python. If half my guts are not mashed out of place, I'm much mistaken. That sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, it
didn't get mentioned too much during the fight, but the fact that he was being squeezed like that. I don't like bear hugs.
Well, unless, you know, they're friendly kind of bears, and I love those. Natala wants to get him out of there, and they both aren't sure where to go. Conan knows there's lots of different passageways hidden around there, but he figures they've got to try and move on.
Yeah, they got to go. But the reason that there's nobody pursuing them now, he thinks, is because they're assuming he's dead.
Right.
Obviously, because they heard him fighting with the monster or saw him go down to the pit. So it's important that they sneak out and don't be, if they're not seen again, they can probably get out of here if they can only find a way.
So they get back around and down some stairs, and then Conan is, I mean, he's so messed up and he's at death's door, but he's still got his attitude. And she listens at the door and she doesn't hear anything, opens the door and the room is empty. He's totally going, you know, step aside, girl. I'm going to kill all these people in here. And she's like, there's nobody in here, man. Just chill out. I get it. You're tough. They keep expecting somebody to show up and attack, but nobody does. She lays Conan down by this fountain while she kind of starts cleaning his wounds. And again, more detail. The flesh was discolored on his back, mottled and spotted black and blue and a sickly yellow where it was not raw. So, I mean, his wounds are really bad. She knows he's not going to make it.
And he's been poisoned.
So she's looking for something. She sees a Zuthalite woman.
I would say Zuthalian is what I would say.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I like that. Zuthalian. She sees a Zuthalian woman sleeping who's got this jar of this awesome wine, which we talked about earlier, I think, in the show, or maybe we didn't talk about it, but it was in the story.
I think we mentioned it, but yeah, the people drink this when they are awake. They drink this awesome wine that makes them feel great and has all the special properties.
And Natala gets the wine, brings it to Conan.
Now, before she gets it, there's a moment where, because this girl might wake up,
right,
she's stealing the wine. And so as she's grabbing it, she's got her poniard poised over the girl's bosom like, I'm going to kill her. And then she gets the wine and everything's fine, but she thinks, you know, it still probably would be better for us if I took her out, because if she wakes up, she'll see us over here. And then after a moment, she says, no, I'm not going to do it. So Natala is, even after all they've been through, still sees that these people are somewhat innocent and doesn't want to commit a murder.
So she gets it to Conan. He takes a sip, but his strength is weak. But once the sip happens, he goes, well, and he kind of chugs it down. And then he says, I love this. Crom, where did you get this? Like it's some kind of 7-Up commercial or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, suddenly it's an ad.
And then she says something, you know, even though she didn't kill the woman, she says, from that alcove where that yellow hussy is sleeping. I'm like, why is she a hussy? She doesn't know that person.
That's true.
Why is she slut-shaming her?
She's been through a lot, man.
I guess so.
But that wine is the stuff.
Yeah, Conan feels like $1,000,000. It's either magic or some crazy science that these guys developed. But, you know, he's back up to snuff. His wounds are still there, but he doesn't feel their effects. So now Conan wants to go boldly out and not sneak around like rats. But then he gets an idea. They go, well, okay, maybe I got a better idea. The chamber that they're in is in one of the towers that is near the wall. And Conan tells Natala to go fill the jug with that water and then tear up some tapestry. And they're going to tie that jug around her neck. And then they're going to climb down the tower out into the desert.
Yes, because as we know from earlier stories, Conan loves climbing towers. Doesn't matter how tall they are, he can do it.
Up or down. You climb down. Any which way, even sideways.
Yep.
He doesn't care. So they go down to the desert. He remembers that Thala said to the south, there's a place. That's a day's walk. And he's like, I can do that. There's an oasis there. So he can make it to that place. This place is too crazy for Conan. She's also pretty nude. So Conan makes her a nice little outfit.
No, he does.
Yeah, he does. He takes some of the tapestries and things and kind of wraps her up. And
well, he says you should cover up. Not that she's ashamed of being naked. It's just that out in the desert, she's going to need some kind of covering. But he says, here's enough silk left for you to make a garment of. So he's not going to make it for her. Although I like the idea of him like going, now, wait a minute. Try this. this color.
I like that better. That he put little flourishes on it and stuff. And
yeah.
It's like, oh no, look, put this flower here. That's great.
There you go, sweetheart.
Conan thinks, you know, these guys might pursue us, but from what Thala said, they probably won't. So we'll be fine. Natala asks Conan if he saw any sign of Thalas, but he didn't. And Natala says that even though Thalas tortured her, she pitied her.
It was a hot welcome we got in that accursed city, he snarled. Then his grim humor returned. Well, they'll remember our visit long enough, I'll wager. There are brains and guts and blood to be cleaned off the marble tiles, and if their god still lives, he carries more wounds than I. We got off light, after all. We have wine and water and a good chance of reaching a habitable country. Though I look as if I've gone through a meat grinder. And you have a sore... It's all your fault, she interrupted. If you had not looked so long and admiringly at that Stygian cat... Crom and his devils, he swore. When the oceans drown the world, women will take time for jealousy. Devil take their conceit. Did I tell the Stygian to fall in love with me? After all, she was only human.
Wah, wah.
That's like the greatest last line we've ever had on this show.
I think so, man. That's pretty good. I mean, it almost feels like there should be a freeze frame after that, or some music should kick in, some like pop song.
How I didn't tell the Stygian to fall in love with me. I mean, what do you expect? I'm coming.
In my mind, too, he's kind of saying this, you know, he's kind of smiling.
Yeah, right.
When he says it, so it's he's making a joke, sort of, to me, which feels like the end of an 80s film.
Oh, totally. It's got that Kurt Russell feel to it.
It does have that Kurt Russell. Why didn't he ever play Conan? That's what I want.
He would have been a great Conan.
In fact, I'm going to start writing some fan fiction, I think.
Did you see that Jason Momoa Conan movie?
I watched a bit of it. Like, I started watching it and I had to stop for one reason. And then I was going to continue watching it, and then I didn't.
It wasn't because it was bad that you stopped watching.
No, it just wasn't particularly good.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, man, I got to find out what happens next. I was just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, it looked a little weak to me. I didn't see it. It looked a little CG heavy.
Oh, I didn't even get to the CG stuff. It just wasn't. There's a definite attitude and flavor in Conan that I think might be kind of hard to capture cinematically because it is sort of over the top in a way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it would really translate well.
Well, the Schwarzenegger movie is pretty great.
Well, I mean, I even think that they sort of seriesed it up a bit. Like, they toned down his conality in it. Like, he's not always just randomly attacking people because they make him angry and stuff.
Yeah.
But there are bits of that in there where he does kind of really dumb Conan stuff in that film, but he's still really tough. But yeah, I love that, the Schwarzenegger Conan film. I think it's great.
The first one. And I've seen that a number of times. The second one I liked, you know, when I was a kid, just because it was Conan and Grace Jones and stuff. But I don't remember. I don't think it's very good. It's got some monsters in it, right?
It does, yeah. You were a big Grace Jones fan as a kid, right? That was like one of your favorite actors.
Yeah, huge Grace Jones fan. I had a, up opposite the Conan poster, I had another poster of Grace Jones also annihilating tons of people in very gory fashion.
Yeah, funnily enough, it was from one of her concerts.
Yeah, exactly.
So next week we are doing another story that's different than this story. It's called Smith, an Episode in a Lodging House. And this is another Algernon Blackwood tale.
Algernon Blackwood, whom we haven't done any of his stories for a while.
No, he's the author of The Wendigo and the one that you like that I did.
The Willows?
The Willows.
Well, I'm interested in it. I always like to pick up more of his stuff. It's hit or miss, but I'm looking forward to another one. We have a guest on that, right?
One of our Kickstarter backers backed at the level to become a guest host on our show, and I'm excited to have him on. His name is Christian Haunton.
I want to thank our reader for this week and last week, and actually the week before that. He's done 3 weeks in a row. Well, it's a nice debut. Andrew Staten. Once again, you can hit him up on Twitter or Instagram, Andrew_Staten, STATON.
And just one last shout out to Frank Street Pizza Smith for recommending this story. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Frank. Really appreciate it. And this has been a great story. So hope you enjoyed our coverage of it. And that's all we have for this week. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. And you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast
at hppodcraft.com.
hppodcraft.com.